Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, mood is wrong. Mood is wrong. Let's go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Episode 67. Thanks for clicking on, turning on, scrolling down, whatever it is you do to download or listen to this weekly podcast. It is much appreciated. And of course, don't forget, Elton Jim has a landing page. Whatever that is. Apparently, I know what it is. All previous podcasts live on that landing page. Just go to WGNplus.com, go to the entertainment section, and hit that, and then you'll see a prompt for Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. And there will be, at this point, the previous 66 episodes. If you heard me before we officially started the podcast today, I was talking about the mood is wrong. The mood isn't wrong. That was just a little homage, if you will, to the late Jerry Lewis, who passed away recently. And Jerry was known, anybody who lives 91 years certainly has a full life and many, many chapters to it. And especially if you're an entertainer and you've been in the limelight, as Jerry was, he literally started performing when he was 5 years old. So think about that. He was a performer for pretty much his entire life, his cognizant life. I mean, I have some memories of when I was 4 or 5, but I mean, you know, so I mean, I think the first memory that Jerry had was probably being on a stage. His parents were both vaudevillian performers. His father was a kind of a Borscht Belt comedian. His mom was a piano player, and they traveled quite a bit. In fact, Jerry wasn't even raised by them. They were, working performers. Vaudeville, for those who don't know, was this this type of entertainment, and it was basically live performing. This is in the days before even radio and television. So this is where people were entertained, and there were small theaters or big theaters all around the country, and performers would follow a circuit and go from city to city and perform 5, 6, 7 shows a day. These theaters were constantly in performance because it was really the only kind of outside entertainment that people had. And it was a tough life. Of course, at the same time, that is where most of the initial performers who became radio stars and then early TV stars all came from the vaudeville tradition, because when it came time for mediums like radio and television to put on programming, this was not even the minor leagues, but this was the training ground. This is where the people were seeing these people performing. They had a name, and they certainly learned to entertain. And those folks like Bob Hope, you may look at some of these names. Maybe you don't even know some of these names. You may have heard of them. When you think about names like Bob Hope or George Burns or Milton Berle or Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin and all these kind of people, Jack Benny, they all came up through the vaudeville tradition, and if you ever watch and see film of them. They can do it all. They weren't necessarily the greatest singers or the greatest dancers or the greatest comedians in many cases. But the fact is that they could do all of those things in with some proficiency. If you watch some of those old movies, yeah, you can see someone like Gene Kelly from Singing in the Rain. I mean, that guy's a great dancer. But then you will also see Bob Hope or Bing Crosby or Danny Kaye from, say, White Christmas, which is on every year, Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye. And you can see that Danny Kaye is a much better dancer than Bing Crosby, but Bing Crosby can still do the steps. These folks worked hard. That was not an easy life. As I said, Jerry Lewis was raised most of his life, or his early life, by relatives because his parents were out on the road from city to city. But Jerry Lewis, I want to talk about Jerry because he is a very interesting performer, and his death does mark, is worth talking about because it's not only significant many times, if you listen to my podcast on a regular basis, you know that I really do like and have a lot of knowledge on, I hope to some extent, on old entertainment and old performers. And I always kind of get on my soapbox and say to folks, geez, you know, I know that you want to know what's going on today, but there is so much that happened before you and before me. And today we have an incredible asset at our fingertips. Call this internet. And you know, if you listen, I mean, I make jokes about technology and I really do have a flip phone. But, you know, look, I use the internet and I understand the immensity of it and the power of it. It's probably the greatest tool, you know, and greatest invention, you know, in the last 100 years. I mean, it's got to be right on tap with the light bulb and things like that. No question. I am disappointed in the way we use it sometimes. As I said, I don't think we use it more for gossip. It's such an amazing and immense research tool. It's unbelievable. I am in shock sometimes when I just go on and I hit a phrase. I go into Google. I hit a phrase. I'm looking for something, and I'm like, this can't be there. And sure, my question is, who put all this stuff up on the internet? When did this get done? Because it's up there. But who did it? When did they do this all? I mean, you're hitting buttons and stuff pops up. Someone had to put this stuff up there. When did they do this? I mean, were we sleeping? Is that when they're doing this? But I hope I'm not, you know, talking on deaf ears, but geez, you know, every once in a while, I know that, you know, we're so much of a society now of in the moment and what's trending and all that BS, but my gosh, there's some amazing things. And there's things that are worth your time and attention that you can learn from and appreciate. And if you like stuff that happened today, it's always great to go back because what happened today was influenced by what happened yesterday. And you'd be surprised how much you will find you like things that happened yesterday. And yes, maybe even if they're in black and white. And what I think is important about Jerry Lewis in terms of his passing is that it really does now. I mean, there's a few people still around from that era, but there are so few of them that are as prominent of that vaudevillian and that old time, that vintage entertainment era. There's so few of them left. I mean, Tony Bennett's, 91, I think, and he's still performing, which is, and from the reviews, he just played at Ravinia here in the Chicago area a couple of months ago. And from the reviews, it was like, it was one of his greatest concerts ever. He's 91! But, you know, in the last several months, in the last years, we've lost Don Rickles and was another person out of that era, and now Jerry Lewis, and it really is coming to an end. It's almost like, you know, the World War II veterans too, the great generation. That there is not too many years for those people, and they will be a part of history. But So, you know, Jerry Lewis is very interesting because he's so many things. You know, you can find adjectives for this guy. He was a classic clown, a classic buffoon. He was obnoxious. He was polarizing. He was an egomaniac. He was an innovator. He was a humanitarian. He was a jerk. And he was a genius. And he was a lot more. And as I said, if you live to be 91, I think that's probably what you will be. It's inevitable that those types of contradictions fill your life. Because if you live that long, you know, you're going to be successful and unsuccessful. You're going to be popular and unpopular. You're going to please everyone, and you're going to make people mad. That's what they call a rich life, folks. At least that's what I would think. And so, yeah, you know, Jerry Lewis was interesting because here's a guy that, you know, for people that are really young, you may have just heard the name and see some old guy, you know. And he recently made news a few years ago by saying that he didn't think that women were funny, which didn't help his cause. And he kind of backtracked from that. But this is my point. You know, I'm walking the walk and talking the talk here, which I always try to do. You know, I'm not going to say that I grew up appreciating or knowing everything about Jerry Lewis, because I didn't. Of many people of my generation, we learned who Jerry Lewis was in the early to mid 70s through the Muscular Dystrophy Telethon. And I actually used to make jokes and say, you know, who is this guy? And B, he only has a job one day a year. What a great career that is. Now, I was saying this without knowing the full breadth of his career before that, because in my world, I was just seeing this guy named Jerry Lewis and on this telethon and on these commercials, and he seemed to work one day a year, and every so often he'd pop up here and there, but that's pretty much the only thing I knew about Jerry Lewis for a long time. And those telethons, you know, over the last several years, they really weren't the same as what they were. And in the 70s, when I grew up, it was really kind of, you know, the high and the low point of those. I mean, Jerry used to be on, those telethons were on for 24 hours on Labor Day. And he was on, in his heyday there in the 70s, he used to be on the whole time. He didn't go take a nap and come back in 8 hours. Now, there are rumors and stories that he probably was taking some amphetamines or something to stay up. And if you watched him at 2 or 3 in the morning, I mean, you could tell if something was going on, because there was way too much energy for a guy, you know, going that long. But my point is, that was Jerry Lewis. And you could like him and hate him, love him. But what most impressed me about Jerry Lewis, and I was lucky enough to see him perform 2 or 3 times in person, was that he was the consummate entertainer. He was always looking to entertain and always looking for a laugh. And that's because, as I said, he was 5 years old. He was up on a stage. He was born with parents who were in the entertainment business. That's all he ever knew. And you could see that even though he seemed like an egomaniac, it was because this was his life and it was so important to him. And you could say, well, this was just entertainment, but not to Jerry Lewis. It wasn't just entertainment. And so when you look at him, you need to look at the whole picture. And that's where the internet can really come in to play. And if you are an inquisitive person, if you're into pop culture, and if you're a younger person, or even a person in their 40s or 50s or even 60s, you may have forgotten about it. I would urge you to take some time and really do a little research on this guy, because he is fascinating. It's hard to imagine, once again, because everything that we have today is established, and so we think that everything was always like this. The Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin, and I remember growing up hearing references to Martin and Lewis and not really even knowing. I always thought it was like Lewis and Clark, the discoverers. I did that in my mind. When I heard of Lewis and a team, I thought of Lewis and Clark because I learned about them in school. But then I'm hearing Martin and Lewis, and I'm like, what is that? And as I got older, and then I'm growing up and I'm watching Dean Martin on television in the 70s, throughout the 70s with the very popular Dean Martin show. And then I get the information that, you know, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis used to be a comedy team. Oh, so that's the Martin and Lewis. And, you know, it's an amazing story. I mean, in 1946, you have to remember, this is right after the World War II. And, you know, this, you know, World War II, I mean, that was pretty heavy war, folks. We're talking about Adolf Hitler. We're talking about bombs in Japan. We're talking about Pearl Harbor. We're talking about people really wondering about the future of the world. And it was a long and hard-fought war. And so 1946, through a stroke of luck, a 20-year-old Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin, a few years older, were both doing the circuit, appearing in small nightclubs. You gotta understand, there was no such thing as playing football fields and hockey arenas. That's not where people went to see entertainment. That really is an outgrowth of the rock and roll generation, because the baby boomers were such a big group, such a passionate group, that all of a sudden they needed big 20,000, 40,000, 50,000, 100,000 seat arenas. But in the 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s, it was small nightclubs where you went to see entertainers. And so Jerry was an unknown, struggling comic, had his own act. Dean Martin was a singer. You know That's Amore. When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's Amore. And of course, Everybody Loves Somebody. Everybody loves somebody sometime. And so they wound up, through a twist of fate, getting together at some New Jersey nightclub in 1946. And as I said, this was a long, hard-fought war. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You know, VJ Day and VE Day. VE means victory in Europe, and VJ Day came later, a few months later, a victory in Japan. And when you see these celebrations in the country, I mean, Times Square around the country, people were just flocking out in the streets and hugging people. This was, you know, people's lives were completely disrupted. You know, there were children never saw their fathers, wives who were supporting the family. And this is long before, you know, women were out in the workforce and went to college. These women were struggling to raise a family and put, food on the table. It was a very tough time. There was rationing. I mean, I don't think that in today's world, we're so pampered. I don't think, you know, we ever could have gotten through a thing like that. Could you imagine somebody saying, oh, by the way, you can't have any, tires for your car for the next 5 or 6 years because we need the tires. We need rubber for the war. And could you imagine people today saying, oh, okay, I just won't get any tires then. Or, you know, you can't buy something that's made of metal because all the metal is going to build, ships and tanks for the war. So there's rationing on metal. So that means you won't be able to buy this or that. And we go, okay, sure. No. Yeah, give me a break. We'd be like, no, I want my washing machine. What are you talking about? There's no rationing. But that's what people... So when World War II ended, it was not only a great victory for our country and democracy and all this patriotic stuff, but getting down to the nitty-gritty, it was a chance for normalcy again in people's lives. The GIs were coming home. And we, as a nation... It was a big collective sigh to say we have been in this war now for, you know, 4 or 5 years, and it's been going on, and now it's over. And let's not think about war anymore and death. Everybody knew someone who died in the war. Ugh. And so 1946, the country was looking to have fun again, to smile again, to live life again. And that's what happens when fate and opportunity meet. So Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin get together in 1946, right when the war is ending and the country is looking to have fun again. And pure fun. It doesn't have to be any, it's just lighthearted. We just want to laugh again. We want to have fun again. And here comes Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin with this act that is completely off the wall. It is slapstick. It is wild. It is spontaneous. It is silly. It is stupid. And it is perfect for the time, because that's what people wanted. They wanted a release, and Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin tapped into that. It was mania. Their stage show, you know, Dean would sing, and Jerry would just, and they would do, you know, skits together, and Dean would kind of, you know, because he was older than Jerry, kind of treat him like a little stupid kid, but he was silly, and he would dump stuff over his head. It was sophomoric humor, no question about it, but it was unbridled. It was unlike anything anyone saw before. Before that, it was always jokes. My mother-in-law is fat. My wife is a battle axe. You know, and then some guys would do a song and dance, and that was it. And these guys broke the rules. You can go online and hit Martin and Lewis, and there's stuff from a TV show they did called The Colgate Hour and other things, and you could see the audience is in hysterics. Or even if they have a band behind them, the band members are in hysterics, because it was this great collective, you know, like I said, sigh of relief and wanting to have fun again. And these guys tapped right into that. And for 10 years, till 1956, they were the Beatles of that generation. There was, if they were doing, they show these amazing scenes. They're playing a long run at the Paramount Theater, which was like one of the main theaters in New York at the time. And they're in a hotel room. They're just in a hotel room, hanging out the window, and the streets are filled with people and young people screaming and yelling at them, and they're hanging out the window, and they're throwing like autographed pictures. It's mania. And that's where Jerry Lewis came from. That's part of his history. And just as the way the Beatles, everybody talks about why did Beatlemania happen so big? Why was there such a frantic reaction to the Beatles? And a lot of times what people will say historically is because, once again, it's when that perfect storm hits. And this happened with Martin and Lewis right after World War II. And it certainly happened with the Beatles. You've got the Kennedy assassination in November of 63. And the country is devastated. And it's in mourning, and it's struggling to digest this young president, this father, shot down. Who, you know, in modern day, people were just beside themselves in November of 63, and then in February of 64, the Beatles arrive in New York, and everything changes. For the same reason, the Beatles, when they are on Ed Sullivan, they looked energetic and fresh, and they were smiling, and there was optimism, and it was as if America had been in grief and mourning for 3 or 4 months, and then all of a sudden these four effervescent guys just playing this rock and roll and having fun, and everybody's into it, and That's why Beatlemania hit so fast and so hard here in this country. We were looking for a release and escape. And that's what Martin and Lewis were back in the 40s. And they had a string of successful movies and television and nightclubs, the Copacabana and things like that. They were the number one. They were the number one act in show business. And I mean, if you look at that era, you have to put them in the same kind of thing in terms of culture as in the 20th century as Picasso and things like that that changed the way entertainment was viewed. And so you could say, well, geez, you know, that's just common now. It wasn't common then. And Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin were forerunners of that. And then after that, when they broke up, you know, Dean went on to have a very successful television show. He obviously was part of the Rat Pack with Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis. And then Jerry, initially, he had a more successful career. He made about 30 movies on his own, directed, wrote, and starred in them. And some of them are classics that you really should see. Once again, I know you want to see what's the newest thing, but, you know, we've got access to all this content. So do yourself a favor. You may have heard of The Nutty Professor, but I got news for you. Eddie Murphy wasn't the first Nutty Professor. It was Jerry Lewis. And when you watch The Nutty Professor, you see the amount of talent that Jerry has. He plays the nerdy guy, which you always you've seen with the big buck teeth and the glasses and the hair. And then he plays and it's kind of a takeoff on the Jekyll and Hyde. So there's the nerdy, Dr. Kelp, and then he becomes Buddy Love, which is basically a takeoff on Dean Martin. But also, kind of the backstage Jerry Lewis. You get a little view of Jerry, certainly plays himself in that as well, as this kind of suave and almost sleazy kind of performer. It's probably always been his masterpiece, and now that he's gone, I don't think he's ever done anything. But movies like The Nutty Professor, you should take a look at, or Rockabye Baby, which is a takeoff on Rock and Roll, or Who's Minding the Store, Cinderfella, another takeoff on Cinderella with Jerry, the Delicate Delinquent, The Patsy, The Ladies' Man. In The Delicate Delinquent. He does a thing that's classic. You can go on YouTube. It just hit the typewriter, Jerry Lewis. He pantomimes music and a fake typewriter. It was one of his classic bits. The guy really was, he knew what was funny. Slapstick, visual, audio. He actually invented a lot of behind-the-scenes filmmaking things, like the ability for a director to see what they just filmed. Now that's commonplace. Before, they would never know. They would have to wait until the film got developed. But Jerry developed this videotape thing so he could see what they just shot. So, you see him later in life and you go, well, this guy really seems to be out of touch and kind of a jerk. As I said, that's how I grew up, saying, this guy looks like an idiot. He's got this job once a year and he's flailing around. And the key thing about Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin, though, and it happened on the telethon, and it's on YouTube as well, hit Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, and Jerry Lewis. I believe it was 1976 on the MDA telethon. Frank Sinatra came out and totally surprised Jerry Lewis and brought Dean Martin out. And these two hadn't spoken in 20 years. There was when they broke up, it was not an amicable breakup. And Dean and Jerry, and you could see Jerry is completely in shock, and they hugged, and I think it sounds as if over the last, I mean, Dean Martin died about 20 years ago, but thankfully I think they did at least reconcile to some extent. But that's a really a great moment to watch as well. But my cognizance of Jerry Lewis and my appreciation of Jerry Lewis really grew in the in like the 80s and on. A great film directed by Martin Scorsese, which was not a big hit when it came out, but it was very, it foreshadowed today's crazy world and reality stars more than I even think Martin Scorsese could have ever predicted. It's called The King of Comedy. It's with Robert De Niro and Jerry Lewis. And De Niro plays this down on his luck, horrible stand-up comedian who ultimately kidnaps Jerry Lewis, who is like Johnny Carson, the King of Comedy. He was a late night. He plays a late night guy, very similar to Jerry again. And that's how he gets on. That's how he gets his break. And it's a great, great movie. And Jerry Lewis got an Academy Award nomination for that. So that's another one to check out. King of Comedy. In the early 90s, Jerry Lewis was performing here in Oak Brook in Illinois at the Drury Lane. And so I was like, you know, I'm going to go see Jerry Lewis just because it's got to be, I just to go and laugh at it. You know, it's got to be so bad it's going to be great because Jerry's a train wreck. That was kind of my view because I only saw him once a year on this telethon. Well, I'll tell you, I was expecting to think that the show was going to be terrible and stupid and schlocky. And for 2 hours, I walked out of there in complete awe of Jerry Lewis. And I never would have expected it. I was in awe of this guy as a pure entertainer for 2 straight hours. He did not leave the stage, and he did everything he could to keep you entertained. He sang, he danced, he told jokes. He took a jar, a big, that was one of his shticks. He took a big jar and put it in his mouth. And there's pictures of him on the internet with the jar in his mouth. He conducted the band. He fell. He flopped. He had complete control of that stage and everything he did, whether he made a fool of himself or anything else. Some things worked, some things different, but didn't. But the fact of the matter is he was up there for 2 hours and he was working his butt off to keep these people entertained. And I walked out of that show with so much respect for him. I was like, you know what? I expected to think this was going to be a big joke. And my gosh, I am a huge Jerry Lewis fan. And then I was lucky enough, a few years later, he made his Broadway debut in Damn Yankees, the famous musical. He played the devil in that. And I saw it on Broadway in New York. And it's not really even in the play, but when you've got Jerry Lewis, this is what you do. And in the middle of the play, there was just about a 20-minute segment that is just Jerry on his own being Jerry. And he did this thing with canes. They would keep throwing these canes at him, and he was juggling and spinning these canes and telling jokes and dancing. And once again, you could not help but just be, you know, respectful of a guy that, once again, not everything worked. And you could have said, well, what's so, but you could see that this guy was committed to being an entertainer. And that is what I respected most about him. So I'm so happy that I got a chance to see Jerry Lewis in person and to really appreciate what he did. And so, as I said before, with everybody who has lived a long life and who has been in the spotlight, yes. I mean, he said things that were terrible, and he was a jerk to many people. As I said, this mood is wrong, mood is wrong. I get that line from back in the 80s, there was a show called Current Affair with Maury Povich, who's still around, but that where he sort of got his start nationally. And they went behind the scenes of, this is about late 80s, they went behind the scenes of the MDA telethon with Jerry, and he allowed them to film. And so you see Jerry as they're preparing for the week of the telethon, and Jerry is in all his egomaniacal glory. And it's once again, go on YouTube, you know, hit, you know, Current Affair Jerry Lewis. And just watch this. It's a study, and it just goes to show you how committed he was. He was very passionate about this this MDA and the muscular dystrophy disease. He raised more than $1 billion on those telethons. And sadly, they never found a cure in his lifetime, but you certainly cannot deny, whether you hate the guy or not, you must give him respect for what he did and the amount of money that he raised. And this whole idea of the telethon and the ice bucket stuff, that's all from Jerry. That's all that's all ways of trying to find ways to create an awareness for a cause. So once again, you can love him or hate him, but you can't ignore him. And I hope you don't ignore him. And that's my hope. I mean, I'm not the greatest Jerry, you know, Lewis fan in the world, but I do think that for all of his flaws, and he was a hugely flawed person, and he made those flaws in public. But this mood is wrong thing. There's a one point in there where they're rehearsing, and all of a sudden he just goes, "Mood is wrong, mood is wrong," and it's just like, oh. And then he's complaining. There's a refrigerator, and somebody during rehearsals is stealing his Eskimo pies, and Jerry makes a big deal. He's yelling at one of his producers, "I don't want anybody to go in that refrigerator and touch my Eskimo pies." And then the next scene, there's a sign on the refrigerator that says, "For Jerry Lewis only." Yes, egomaniacal, spoiled, everything you want to say. But at the end of the day, a talented and committed entertainer. So... believe me, you know, I've been a member of the Friars Club in New York, which is this club, an entertainment club that is you know, more than 100 years old. I mean, there was a time when everybody in entertainment was a member of this club, and for the last several years, Jerry was what they called the abbot. He was kind of the ceremonial head of the club, and so as a friar member, I have lost my abbot as well. But yeah, and you always hear things about the French. Jerry got like their highest honor. The French thought Jerry got his due in France for some reason. They got his talent. They got him. And you always hear about Jerry being honored by the French. They got him more than we did. But as I said, take some time. Because we are losing some of these people, and there's not many of them left. And Jerry, I really think, is kind of the end of an era. As I said, there is Tony Bennett. But in terms of that vaudevillian performer, that jack of all trades, the comedian, the singer, the dancer, you name it, Jerry did it. And there's not that many people around anymore that came from that tradition and who really gave their life to entertain. And that's what he did. And as I said, any entertainer knows that you cannot hit you never bat 1,000. And Jerry certainly didn't bat 1,000, but he got more hits than he made outs. And so I would urge you to look at him from a different light and take and as I said, it's all there on the internet. You can see this stuff in person. You could see it for yourself. You can see some of the early Martin and Lewis things. You could see some of his great movies. I said you could see some of his later stuff, like King of Comedy. And some of these other moments, I would urge you to do that, because as I said, and I would urge you to go back and watch Casablanca if you've never seen it. I'd urge you to go see Dr. Strangelove and Peter Sellers if you've never seen it. I'd urge you to see so many movies. I'd urge you to see Citizen Kane. Yes, it's an amazing film. You will have a new appreciation for Orson Welles. These are all names you probably say, "Oh, give me a break. It's all black and white movies. I don't like black and white." Well, you know what? I guarantee if you watch Casablanca, you will forget it's in black and white. Okay? So, Jerry, I thank you for helping me discover who you are and appreciate your talent, because he was an icon, and he was somebody, as I said, that can either love him or hate him. And of course, you know, he would end those telethons with "You will never walk alone," you know, and he would cry during them. And some of it was, you know, he put it all out there. And that's all you could say. That, you know, people would, a lot of times would say, "Oh, you know, he's crying to raise some money. I don't believe that. I think he was very dedicated to that, and I think that if he had to cry to get you to donate some money, in his mind, then I will do that. I will strip my emotions if you will make a phone call. So that's a kind of, as I said, the key word there is entertainer, yes, but commitment through it all. I really think that is Jerry Lewis's greatest attribute. He wasn't a perfect person by any means, but he certainly was a committed entertainer. And when you see that, when you see anybody do something that they are completely committed to and that they completely love and they have a huge passion for it, yes, they will be jerks about it because they can't understand why it's not that important to you. And that was Jerry Lewis. So I would urge you to take a look at some of his stuff, and I bet you get the same kind of revelation that I did. I never expected to be a big Jerry Lewis fan, and the irony is, about 4 days before he died, as we approach Labor Day, and Jerry was, removed from the MDA telethon a few years ago, sort of unceremoniously, and I said to my wife, Labor Day just isn't the same without Jerry Lewis. And then 3 or 4 days later, he passed away. I couldn't believe that. And then I've been decluttering, and I went through this box. I have all these magnets that we used to put on a refrigerator. And once again, 4 or 5 days ago, I was going through these magnets and going, oh, wow, I remember buying this one. And I had a damn Yankees magnet from the Broadway show. And when he died, I said, my God, I just saw that. So I pulled it out of the box, and it's on the refrigerator right now. It'll be there for a few weeks or so, just to pay a little tribute to Jerry. So Jerry Lewis passes away at 91. He was a clown, a buffoon. He was obnoxious. He was an egomaniac. He was a humanitarian. He was an innovator. He was a jerk, and he was a genius. And he will be remembered, and his influence will be remembered for a long time. We'll miss you, Jerry. And we welcome back here Elton Jim Toronto and Captain Podtastic. And now we will stroll into the Pop Culture Club. Emily Arminetti, are you there?
I am.
How you doing?
I'm a little hoarse today.
Why?
I'm sure. I got a little bit sick in the past week, and then it sort of culminated in laryngitis.
Wow.
And I totally lost my voice.
Oh, really?
By the way. You must have put some kind of, like,
Well, it's funny you say that. If you listen to
episode. You put the whammy on me. Because Saturday morning, I woke up, I had no voice.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that's funny because on Saturday morning is when I took the pin out of your doll.
Right. It was like right there in my throat.
Yeah. Well, if you listen to episode 66, we're having fun, obviously. You don't sound bad though.
No, it's just coming back. My voice is coming back. It still has a little bit of a Kim Carnes quality to it, I would say.
Wow, there's a reference. You've got Betty Davis. You've got Betty Davis eyes.
Right, exactly.
Her hair is Harlow gold.
Right.
She's got Betty Davis eyes.
Quickly. Thank you for putting the whammy on.
Well, I mean, I
my family wedding, a Saturday night, could not talk to anyone.
Oh, that's a shame.
Could not catch up with anyone.
That's a shame. If you weren't listening, Emily, who lives is the ultimate hipster. She lives in Austin, Texas, but she's from Chicago. She came back here for a wedding, and I've had her on now for almost, I would say, when is your year anniversary?
Oh, I think it's coming up soon. I don't know exactly when, but
yeah, I think it's sometime in September. I'll have to take a look. But so I haven't seen Emily in several years, and she came to town for a week for a wedding, and which seems to be now commonplace. She blew off an Elton Jim. She just joined the club.
You're leaving out the part where I said, "Hey, the week's not over. How about lunch on Saturday?"
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. She asks me on Friday.
Too busy.
Yeah. She asks me on Friday.
You're leaving out the part about how for months I've been trying to convince you to go to Ravinia for Melon Camp.
Yeah, I know, but that's not spending time. You're going to be there with your girlfriends all drunk with sundresses on and
sundresses on.
Bad sundresses and sunglasses and you're
out on the lawn.
Yeah, all your selfie sticks. I mean, we think that's. I don't even want to see you in that scene. I'll have to take a shower.
You know, my friends are somewhat civilized, but we're not.
Not when you get together. I can only imagine. I can only imagine. Is this an all girls get together or
no,
there?
No. I have lots of guy friends too.
I thought it was just an all girl thing.
No.
Okay, so at least there'll be some testosterone there to even things out.
Oh yeah, there will be plenty.
Yeah, but so Emily, you know, she kind of blew me off, and so I was like, well, I don't know if I'm going to call you next week. So I'm glad to hear that you had laryngitis.
You decided I'm going to call you, but I'm going to take away your voice.
Yeah, so I'm happy to hear you had laryngitis. But anyway, before we get into our main topic, I did want to ask you what, you know, you're a pop culture maven, which is why I talk to you every week about pop culture topics, both current as well as, you know, in the past. What do you have any kind of memories or recollections or opinions on Jerry Lewis at all? Or was that just way too before your time?
You know, it was way before my time. I think when I was a kid, he was mostly known for the telethon. You know, he did all the muscular.
I mean, mine too. Until I did my own homework, definitely.
Yeah, and but I heard you mention what was it? The one with Robert De Niro? Was it King of Comedy?
Yes, the King of Comedy. Right.
Yes, I have seen that movie because my dad. It's one of my dad's like requisite viewing list. So it's like one of those things that my dad made us watch. You know, not like as kids, but like as we got older, he's like, you have to watch this. So I have actually seen that film, and it was good. But that was a little bit darker, I think, for him, wasn't it?
Oh, certainly. I mean, yeah, I mean, that was a very dark movie, and he played a real son of a bee, an egomaniac as well. A lot of people said that Jerry Lewis really didn't even act. He just sort of played himself as this, you know, obsessed you know, talk show host of like a Johnny Carson type of that, you know, dominating, you know, the number one late night talk show host. And yeah, but what's so great about that, I'm glad that you have seen them. I your dad continues to get a lot of brownie points with me. I've never met your dad.
He does.
Yeah, I've never met him, but I think we could hang out.
Oh, for sure.
Certainly more than me and his daughter, clearly.
Yeah. You can sit, hang out, look at your flip phones.
Yeah, right? Because, I mean, you know, his daughter doesn't even call me.
Admire each other's flip phones. But that, I would say that is probably my biggest Jerry Lewis.
Well, I would urge you, as I urge the audience, to, I know you're busy, and I know you're always trending. And you're worried about what's
always trending.
You're always trending, but really use the power of the internet to look back. There's some stuff. I mean, to see the way the crowds reacted to Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis in 1946 or 1950 is it's Beatlesque. It's amazing when you see the way that these guys were really the number one. There's a great shot, as I said. You can go online and see it. They're in a hotel because they got this long run at the Paramount Theater, and they're just hanging outside the window. And the people they're for blocks. The New York streets are just jammed with people just screaming. It's literally like the Beatles. It's unbelievable.
Oh,
Yeah, it's very cool because they were kind of like the Beatles of the post-war World War II era. You know, that's right when they became popular. So anyway,
I will have to get on the information superhighway.
Yes, yes,
out.
please get on the ramp. Put your blinker on.
Pedal to the metal.
Merge. And keep up. And you, if you want, even use the diamond lane. So we wanted to talk about here. I can't, you know, you mentioned this topic to me, and I was kind of a little at the beginning saying, well, I don't know, it's kind of too early, but I'm looking at, where did August go?
I know, get with the program.
Wow. I mean, I was thinking, Emily says, well, you know, why don't we talk about the upcoming television season? And I said, well, that's a great idea. We'll certainly do that. But I mean, it doesn't happen until September. And now September is like 2 weeks away.
Not even. It's like a week away.
I know. And even one of the shows that we're going to talk about, a lot of the newer shows or a lot of the old, you know, like the shows that are returning, they don't really come on until, and now even the newer shows, they always used to be like right after Labor Day. But now they've pushed that back until late September. But some shows are actually going to be on the first week of September, which is one of the ones we're going to talk about, which is American Horror Story on FX.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it September 5th?
It's September 5th.
Yeah, so.
And this is big on my radar. First.
Yeah, so what? So now this is always, this is by Ryan Murphy and everybody, you know. This
right.
Is, and so now, you know, they've had.
So this is the anthology series, and, you know, so every season it's a completely different topic. It's a somewhat different cast,
but a lot of the same people that play different characters, yeah, but the same actors.
Yeah, at this point, Ryan Murphy has kind of created this like stable of actors who just like, you know, keep coming back to work with him. Not even just on American Horror Story, but even in some of the other series that he's created more recently, like Scream Queens, and now he's doing this American Crime Story series. It started with The People vs. O.J. Simpson, and will continue on. But this season of American Horror Story is called Cult. And from what I understand, it's going to focus on the election.
Yeah, I'm wondering how they're going to, I mean, like you're saying there, Sarah Paulson has been, and she's, you know, won awards for that. And then obviously Jessica Lange has been in a lot of them. And,
oh, yeah, she's been fantastic. I'm sorry that she's left the series, which was of her own choice. She wanted to go do different things. But Jessica Lange has been so brilliant on every season of American Horror Story.
Yeah, Kathy Bates.
Yeah, Kathy Bates was on the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, James Cromwell.
I don't know. Have you seen the trailer that they released? I think it was just this past week. It was the first trailer.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. So I think it seems that they're going to pit. Like, I was first thinking, like, the election, when I heard that it was going to focus on the election, I thought, how exactly are they going to do this? And you know Ryan Murphy always finds a way, right?
Right.
But what I took from the first trailer is that this seems to pit Sarah Paulson, who apparently is playing a big Hillary supporter, against Evan Peters, who plays a Trump supporter. And I believe that it sort of starts around the time of the actual election itself. So I think it kicks off with kind of the election results. And as always, it looks very interesting.
Yeah, no, this is going to, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, Ryan Murphy has become the king of comedy. You're talking about, he's the king of Hollywood right now. He's done the not only American Horror Stories, but he did the other thing with Susan Sarandon and Jessica Lange.
Feud, yeah, and Feud. That's going to become a new series as well.
Yeah, so that was Feud. That was about Joan Crawford and Betty Davis. We talked about Kim Carnes earlier. A little tie in there. And then obviously The People versus O.J. Simpson, which ran away with the Emmys. And he's actually doing a new one now on the death and shooting of Gianni Versace, which I think is going to be coming out this year as well. So he is obviously one of the main movers and shakers, and he doesn't shy away from controversy. And obviously, like so many in Hollywood, I mean, the Trump presidency is certainly the cause celeb, if you will, no pun intended. And so he's not wasting any time, and he's going right after it. So there's certainly going to be a lot of interest in that on FX on September 1st. Now, when looking over the list
September
here, 5th. September 5th, I'm sorry. Now, looking at the list here, it really does seem like we're going to be going back to the future. We've got a new reboot of Roseanne. We're going to have a reboot of Will and Grace.
Yeah.
Of Will and Grace. And the show I'm most looking forward to seeing is the return of Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm. I knew it was coming back, but I didn't know it was going to be on October 1st. I can't wait.
I know. So, yeah, this one is also really big on my radar. I mean, I was reading that this has been off the air for 6 years, and I almost couldn't believe it.
Because I
remember watching the last season and then hearing that he was going to take a break, and that really doesn't feel like 6 years have gone by, but apparently.
Yeah.
It's
amazing.
But I saw this really funny ad, I don't know if you've seen it, where it's like Larry David, and he's sort of styled as Julius Caesar, and then the tagline says, "He left, he did nothing, he returned."
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Classic Larry David.
Have you seen the trailer? Because I didn't see that one. I saw the one where he's sitting in his apartment. And he looks out, it's at night, he looks out his window, and there's the bat signal, but it's Larry's head instead of the bat signal. And he's sitting in his apartment, and he sees the bat signal, and he goes, I don't think so. And then the phone rings, he picks up, he goes, "Will you just take it down? I'm not coming." And yeah, so I can't wait. Whether it's good or bad, I really fashion. When I watch Larry David's show, I completely track with it. That is my life. That is my perspective. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but I see when I watch that, I say this is he stole my life. That is the way I look at things. That is my attitude on stuff. And as I said, if I had my way, everywhere I walked around, that theme song would just be following me because I get into the same kind of situations that he does. But, yeah, I can't wait for that one. But like I said, the Roseanne thing. Now, are you excited for the Will and Grace?
Of course I am.
Of course you are.
It's on the calendar already.
When is that coming on?
September 28th.
I had to laugh. There was a cover story on Entertainment Weekly a couple of weeks ago talking about the comeback, and it said they are funnier and gayer than ever.
Oh, good. That sounds very promising.
I'm like, my gosh, have times changed? They're bragging about how gay the show is.
Right. Oh, look, I loved Will and Grace. I loved the original. It was very funny. But like with all other shows, it's like, it's nice when shows that you love, you know, before they get stale, before people get tired of them, when they know that it's time to go. But I think in this case, you know, they've been off the air long enough. I think if the writers are good enough, it's going to be really good. And I think they'll be able to come back with a kind of a fresh perspective, but you'll still, you know, love these characters the same way you loved them the first time around. So,
well, it'll be interesting. I mean,
I have big expectations, but I'm also, you know, cautiously optimistic because I don't want them to ruin the original series either.
Well, that's always, you know, that's always the fear. I mean, once again, Michael Jordan ended his career in the best possible way, and then he came back, and when he was lesser of a player and his legacy, but at the end of the day, he's still Michael Jordan. And I think if you like Will and Grace, I mean, you know, the same thing happened. There were so many cries for, you know, Arrested Development to come back, and then they came back, and then, you know, people liked it, but there wasn't the same kind of, you know, excitement about it. And I've been watching, you know, I've been talking about Twin Peaks when it came back, and I have had a love hate relationship with the new Twin Peaks. There's only a couple of episodes left. And I'm going to have to go back and watch it one more time when it's all finished to really see if I liked it or not. Because on a weekly basis, it both frustrates me as well as exhilarates me, which I guess is why I like the show anyway. But so a lot of times bringing shows back, you know, we'll see. Now, one thing that I find interesting, did you hear about the fact that now, so Kevin James, you know, has this show, Kevin Can Wait.
Yes.
Leah Remini came on for the last couple episodes at the end of the season as a guest star. And I guess the network was so enamored with their chemistry which they had for many years on the successful King of Queens, that they killed off his wife character, and now Leah Remini is going to be on that show.
I did hear that.
I mean, the poor actress.
I know. And I bet Leah Remini felt kind of weird about that, but at the same time was like...
It's a job.
I got a job.
It's a job.
TV.
Yeah.
Prime time.
Yeah. I mean, and so, I don't know. I mean, she's not going to be his wife. I guess they were former partners there because he was a former policeman. So I'm not sure how they're...
Okay.
I'm not sure how they're going to work it in, but I do know that they're killing off the wife. And I guess they're going to...
That I did not know. I thought that they were killing off the wife and then just replacing her with Leah Remini.
No, I don't think so.
Has a different, so then it makes it seems kind of weird that they killed off the wife. So it makes me think that eventually that they're probably planning this kind of Ross and Rachel
right.
arc.
Who knows?
Story arc.
Yeah.
That whole will they, won't they?
Yeah.
You know,
but
get
that's,
together, stay together.
That's probably one of the biggest kind of wows because, I mean, that, you know, but once again, you know, television is really bad, you know, by the fact that they are bringing back these shows. I think when you see them going back to the well for a Will and Grace or a Roseanne, or, you know, putting Kevin James, you know, and they're bringing back Dynasty. The CW is bringing back Dynasty.
I saw that, too.
You know, and Curb Your Enthusiasm comes back. I really think that this is a total reaction by the networks and even, like, the pay services to Netflix and Amazon yeah. Prime. Because that's where all the buzz is.
Sure, but here's the thing. I don't quite get the strategy of rebooting old shows when there's all this perfectly good original content out there, but Netflix is scooping it up, you know? So, like, you know, the Netflix rebooting all these old shows, on one hand, could make you think, well, gee, there must not be a whole lot of good original writing out there, but I don't think that's the case, really, if you look at Netflix.
Well, no, but you have to understand that Netflix doesn't have the restrictions that network television does in terms of language, sure. in terms of content, in terms of situations, in terms of sexuality. You know, the network shows are still the network shows. They're over the air. They're free. Netflix is a pay-per-view, just like HBO and Showtime. And so, yeah, I think there's no question that a lot of the people with compelling content are going to the pay services and the Netflixes, you know, and the HBOs and the Showtimes of the world because they are able to do more mature and more riskier type of entertainment. Whereas the networks, they're just going back to say, they're saying, you know what, this worked before and we're kind of dominated by the rules of that we are under by the FCC. And so let's just go back to the well and let's bring, and believe me, if even one of these becomes a hit, if Will and Grace becomes a hit again, or the Roseanne reboot becomes a hit again, then you watch. The floodgates will open.
Right.
Because you've already seen, like, Full House, and as I said, you know, Arrested Development. But now you've got, these are going to be on prime time. You know, these are not on Netflix. These are on prime time TV. And if the networks see that rebooting and getting these people, as long as they can still walk and talk and they haven't gained 70 pounds, then you watch. I mean, it's going to be, it's just going to be, you know, it's just going to be a every possible show you can think of with anybody who's still alive and looks good. It had some popularity. I wouldn't be surprised if Friends comes back.
Well, see, now that will never happen, but only because the actors will never come back.
I know, but yeah, you know what?
And you know, the same thing, and it's a shame, too, because two shows I would love to see come back, Friends and Seinfeld, but they will never come back.
No, they won't. No, they couldn't afford them.
Cast members either have too much money that they don't need to go back to that, or they've got enough good gigs going on now that they don't need to go back to that. So...
Well, there's two shows I was looking at here that I'm kind of interested in seeing. I don't think they're going to be any good. Oh no! Well, I don't know. I should say three, but I'm interested to give it a.
I'm interested in seeing these two shows that I don't.
Well, because I want to see The Young Sheldon. I'm going to give it a shot. I can't believe it's going to be good, but who knows? I'd love to be surprised. Once again, I told you, I'm Larry David, so would you expect me to be optimistic? So I want to give, I love The Big Bang. I think I remember seeing The Big Bang Theory and first show, and I told my wife, I said, that guy is going to be a huge star, James Parsons. I said, that guy, this character and that guy are going to be huge from the first show. And sure enough. So I'm interested to say, I love the Sheldon character. So I want to see if this young Sheldon is just a gimmick or not. This other one on Fox looks interesting. With Seth MacFarlane, have you seen that? The takeoff on Star Trek?
No.
The
Or it's Star Trek.
It's called The Orville. I don't know what that means, but it's kind of a Star Trek takeoff. So I'm interested because I like Seth MacFarlane.
But is this supposed to be a comedy? Is
it it's like a spoof. It's gonna be probably like Airplane. What I mean?
Okay.
Yeah, and then I really loved Bates Motel, and so Hightower?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
He's playing the good doctor, and apparently he plays an autistic guy that is a great surgeon. And so.
Well, I will tell you. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward. Those are the first three that at least have caught my eye.
I feel like I can tell you right now that that last one is going to be terrible.
I know
it
is.
I only say that because there are way too many shows on TV about doctors.
I know.
Hospitals.
Oh, I know. I like him, and I'm going to give it a shot. I'm not expecting, as I said at the beginning, I don't expect any of these to be good. But I will at least give them a shot. And then I am looking forward to seeing that Johnny Versace, and now, once again, with the popularity of the O.J., you know, People versus O.J. Simpson, not only are they going to recreate the Andrew Cunanan shooting of Johnny Versace, but they're also going to recreate, I think it's on ABC, the Menendez murders.
Oh, okay, but that is not, that's a different, that's not a Ryan Murphy thing, right?
No, that's not. No, yeah, but I'm just saying is that now, once again, with the popularity of the Ryan Murphy thing, other people are looking around saying, okay, what other high-profile 90s horrific murders that are play into the sweet spot of the Gen X millennials can we play on? And there's, and the 90s, for whatever reason, seem to be ripe with a lot of murders.
I know, right?
Yeah. And Edie Falco is playing in this Menendez thing, so it's not going to be some schlocky thing. I mean, they've got Edie Falco probably playing the Menendez's mother.
No, I think she plays the attorney. Don't you remember?
Oh, that's right. You're right. Oh, yes.
Hair?
Yes, you're right. I'm sorry. I just saw a quick thing. That's exactly correct. She's going to play that. Their defense attorney.
Like a real firecracker.
Yeah. Oh, she'll be. Yeah, she'll be great in that. Mm-hmm. She'll be great in that. Is there anything that you're looking forward to then, aside from Will and Grace, which is going to be funnier and gayer than ever?
Well, so I am looking forward to Zach Braff's return to primetime network TV. I don't know if you ever used to watch Scrubs.
Now, you know what? You brought this up. We were talking about this. You know, did I totally miss the boat on Scrubs?
I mean, if you didn't watch it, then yes, you totally.
I did not watch it. I did not watch it.
Such a good show. It was just a 30-minute comedy.
Yeah.
Zach Braff was the star. It was such a good show. It was, I mean, I don't know how to explain it exactly. There was a little bit of a level of, it was a little bit surreal humor.
Right.
Involved in the show. Like, I that's the only way I can describe it. But it's very funny. And I feel like, I've been trying to get you like on Netflix forever, but I feel like there's a way we need to find a way to get you caught up on this show.
I am going to.
I think
we've had the same television now for about 10 years, you know, the actual television set, and it's not a smart set. Right. So I believe in the next couple of months, it's time for an upgrade, and I will get a smart set. And the first thing I do is I'm going to get a Netflix subscription, and I am going to then be so obsessed with Netflix, you're going to say, oh, my God, would you stop talking about Netflix?
Right. First, I will inundate you with suggestions of things you need to watch or catch up on.
Yeah, I don't know why Scrubs. I don't know why Scrubs. I know I watched. I tried it, and I don't know why, and then I never stayed with it. And I hear so many people talk about Scrubs, and I'm like, boy, you know, I missed the boat. As I said, I have always you know, admitted when I am either late to the show or completely missed the boat. As I said, I was late to the boat on on Breaking Bad, and then I binged in, and I was late to the show on Game of Thrones, and I'm glad I binged in. Yes. So I will give Scrubs a chance, because I actually
like. Right, and then if you like that, you should check out this new show that Zach Braff is going to be on.
Alex Inc. Right.
This is interesting, actually. It's called Alex Inc. Although I think they've changed the title a couple of times, but it's about a radio journalist who kind of pulls like a Jerry Maguire and just like up and leaves his job one day and then starts up a podcast company. So I think it's right up our alley.
Oh, that's interesting. All right. Well, I don't mind Zach Braff. I like him. And I think...
Yeah, I mean, I hope this show is good.
Yeah. And there's a few other sitcoms that I'm going to at least take a look at. I think, who's in? There's one with the guy from Saturday Night Live, Moynihan. Me, myself, and I, or something.
Oh, Bobby Moynihan.
Yeah, Bobby Moynihan. And I think he's going to be on a show. I can't believe, I don't know if it's John Lithgow. It might be with him. I'm not sure. But so we'll see. Once again, the TV season and television is so much different now just because there's so much more to choose from, as we talked about, not only on network television, not even on the more established things like HBO. But now you've got to contend with Hulu and Amazon and obviously Netflix with all this original programming, Stranger Things. And is Whatchamacall still on? What's the prison show? With about Orange is the New Black or something?
Oh, yeah, Orange is the New Black. Yeah, I think that's still
going. Is that still going?
I kind of dropped off.
Yeah, but there's just so much.
I think it's still going.
Yeah, there is so much out there. I mean, and a lot of it isn't great. I've been trying on the Sundance Channel, Transparent with Jeffrey Tambor.
Coming back soon.
I never saw Transparent ever because it's on Amazon. So I'm giving that a shot, and I'm on the fence. They need to grab me a little more.
Well, you know, it gets all kinds of accolades.
So. Yeah, so we'll see. I love Jeffrey Tambor, and I mean, there's great actors in it. So I'm waiting to. I'm just waiting because it's so far. I'm on the fence with that one, but well, I am excited once again to
listen. Real quick before we wrap up, though,
yeah,
I have to pay a little homage. Because this is going to be the last season of one of my favorite shows.
What's that?
So the other thing that I wouldn't say I'm looking forward to, but I'm definitely going to be tuning into, is the final season of The Middle, which
yes,
you've probably never seen.
I love The Middle.
Yeah, did you know this is going to be the last?
I just heard about that. I love The Middle. It's one of those shows that it sneaks up on you. There's nothing. It's a very traditional sitcom, but it's very well acted. There's some great characters. Patricia Heaton from Raymond does a great job as the mom, and you know, I love Brick, the young kid, and Sue and Axel.
The best.
I love it all. I mean, it's just a great. It's a very traditional sitcom, but it's just goofy and quirky enough. And I'm glad it's this last season because I think it's getting close. It's kind of running its course. But here's the one question I have. I'm glad that you like The Middle. I thought you were too hip for The Middle.
No, I love The Middle.
But here's my question, because I've been thinking about this from the first season. So, you know, Patricia Heaton at the beginning and the end of the show always does a voiceover. There's kind of like a little moral to the story. And so it's kind of like she's looking back, you know, and using their family as a, you know, as a example for some kind of bigger meaning about family and things like that. So here's my question to you as a regular viewer, because I've been wondering this almost from day one. Do you think that show takes place in the present, or is she looking back? Like, is Patricia Heaton the mother? And the narrator, is she like 80 years old, and is she reading a book or looking back at this, or is it just in present time?
That is a very interesting question, one that has never occurred to me.
Oh, really?
No, I feel like you are very observant. I never really even noticed or thought. I mean, obviously, I noticed that that's how every show begins and ends, but I never really thought there was that. I never really thought to think about it any more than that. But with this being the last season, perhaps your question will finally be answered.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see that. Yeah. So you never thought of that, huh? No, I thought of that, right? I'm wondering if she's looking back at her, you know, kids and her life. And so this show, while it takes place in today's world, I'm wondering if in reality she's way in the future and she's looking back at her parental time in the 2000s and you know, either writing a book about it or looking at photos. But there's moments when it does have that little tinge of Wonder Years.
Mm-hmm. Nostalgia,
and,
right?
Yeah,
right.
And
it
so that's
a little bit of a nostalgia.
Yeah, so that's why I wonder, because it always is a lesson that she sort of gives, and so I'm wondering if that lesson comes from her experience as she looks back on it now. You know what I mean? So I'm wondering if that's how that ends. Well, I'm glad that you like the middle.
I think you may finally get your answer.
Yeah.
Right?
So I never would have expected a consummate hipster like Emily Arminetti to have liked such a very, you know, traditional sitcom. Look at you.
Yes, but it's a traditional sitcom that never really got the recognition it deserved.
No.
So therefore, it was slightly off the radar, which actually makes it perfect for hipster fodder.
Oh. Well, very good. I'm looking forward to the new season. We will touch base when things start rolling, and we could come back and then we can do a little checklist here and a little progress report on how our shows, these new shows, are going and what new surprises were on shows that were never even on our radar screen. And we can. I'm ultimately really looking forward to see if Will and Grace is as funny and gayer as ever.
Right. We'll see. Well, we'll do like a mid-season pulse check.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what we'll find.
All right, Emily, thanks for joining me. I'm glad to know that you had laryngitis, and you now know that you don't cross me.
I have learned my lesson.
Very good. That's all I wanted to hear. We'll talk to you next week if you have a voice.
Okay. Thanks, Tim.
Take care. And that wraps episode 67 of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic right here at WGNplus.com. A new episode is posted every Monday for your enjoyment. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. I had a good time today. Hope you did too. We will talk to you soon, because don't forget that Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic is the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.